My Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 8, Dhruva Maharaj leaves home. Text 23.
Nanyam jatak padma palasha lochanan dukakshidam te mrigayami kanchanan umrigyate hasta grihita padmayam Shriyetarangavimrigyamanaya. Naanyam,
no others.
Tada,
therefore,
Padmapalashalochanat,
from the lotus-eyed Supreme Personality of Godhead,
Dukachidam,
one who can mitigate others' difficulties.
Te,
your.
Mrigayami,
I am searching after.
Kanchana,
anyone else.
Yaha,
who.
Mrigyate,
searches.
Hastagrihita padmaya,
taking a lotus flower in the hand.
Shriya,
the goddess of fortune.
Itarai,
by others.
Anga,
my dear boy.
Vimrigyamanaya,
one who is worshipped. Translation. My dear Dhruva, as far as I am concerned, I do not find anyone who can mitigate your distress, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose eyes are like lotus petals. Many demigods, such as Lord Brahma, seek the pleasure of the Goddess of Fortune. But the Goddess of Fortune herself, with a lotus flower in her hand, is always ready to render service to the Supreme Lord. So, we're also in the same situation as Dhruva Maharaj, because living in this material world means sarvakama, full of material desires. It's the nature of this world. Now, when the living entity comes here, he's under the influence of the external potency, avaranatmika shakti. The maya has two potencies. One potency is prakshapatmika shakti, or the throwing potency. It throws us into the material world. And once we're thrown here, then avaranatmika, we're covered over. We're completely bewildered, bewitched by the witch, Maya. This is because when the living entities desire to enjoy the position of Krishna, then they are thrown. Mayatare japatiyatare. They're thrown down into the material world by the agency of Maya. So, once we're here, then we get a material body, a material mind, a material intelligence, a false ego. And these things are attracted to the material objects. Why? Why are they attracted? Because they're produced of these. They are part of the material energy. And it is a arrangement of the material energy that one particular sense is attracted to a particular sense object. You may have noticed that moths, when there's a light at night, all the moths come there. And different species are attracted by different sense objects. For example, every species, the male is attracted to the female. It's not that they have a choice. No, it is a program. As soon as one gets a particular body, then the senses that are acquired with that body will be attracted to other sense objects in the material world. There's no choice. That is the nature. It's like, it is natural. So, that means that as long as we're here in a material body, we will be attracted to material things, sense objects, for our enjoyment. Not exactly our enjoyment, but for the false enjoyment of the senses. We say false enjoyment because the senses can't really enjoy. Senses have no, in one sense, they have no real identity. They're simply matter. They have no life. Senses are not alive. When I'm trying to please my eyes are not alive. They cannot say, thank you very much, this is a very beautiful thing you've shown me. No. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to please my soul. The soul is trying to get pleasure through the agency of the eyes. Like some people like to take pictures with cameras. They're very much attached to cameras. They buy cameras and lenses and different types of film. And they're always, wherever you go, they're always taking pictures and looking through there. So they're trying to get pleasure that way. And then they try to save the pictures or make moving pictures. They're trying to please their eyes through the agency of the camera. But in the same way, we're trying to please the soul through the agency of the sense of the eyes or the nose. But actually, it's the soul that's the enjoyer. So, we are trying to enjoy this material world with all of its 24 material elements. However, no matter how hard we try, we're never satisfied. And that is what Suniti is saying here. I do not find anyone, she says. Na anyam, tata, tata, therefore I do not find anyone. Dukkha chittam, dukkha chittam. No one can, chittam means cut. No one can cut the distress. Dukkha means misery. No one can cut your distress. No one can free you from the miseries of the material world except Padma Palasha Lochana, the lotus-eyed Supreme Personality of Godhead. What a wonderful statement. She summarized all the books in the library. You can go to the biggest library. There's thousands of books. They're writing about this and that and this and that. But she, in one line, Suniti has come to the conclusion that this material world is a place of distress. And there's only one person who can free you from that distress. And that is the lotus-eyed Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, that's why Srimad Bhagavatam is so important, because in one line, you get the complete perfection of education. Vasudeva sarvamiti. Vasudeva is everything. Krishna is everything. Vedais cha sarvaraham eva veja. By all the Vedas, by all knowledge, Krishna is to be known. She's saying that too. Only Krishna. Because everyone is in distress. If someone thinks he isn't in distress, then he's fool number one. He's as dull as a stone. How can anyone say, I'm not in distress? It's like if you go to a man and he's lying in the hospital and he's got tubes running through his nose and his arms are up and his legs are up and he's being fed intravenously and you ask him, how are you doing? And he says, yeah, I'm doing great. How can you say you're doing great? You're being fed intravenously. Your blood is being, you know, circulated 30 times an hour or day, whatever they do. And you're saying you're okay, you're doing fine? What is that fine? I guess relatively speaking it's fine compared to, you know, if you were in the last few seconds of before he was dying and he was going through his death throes, I guess relatively speaking you could say he's doing fine. Maybe the guy next to him is screaming in pain, so compared to him I'm doing fine. So this is material happiness. Compared to the other guy who's screaming in agony, I'm doing great. Having a ball. It's like the... there's a story about... in India, they use cow dung. And they use cow dung for fuel. But first they have to dry it. So they take patties of cow dung and they stick it on the wall. And then when it gets dry, then they take it and burn it. It's very good fuel. So when the dry cow dung is being burned, one of the wet cow dung is still on the wall. He's thinking, just look at that poor dry cow dung. He's getting burned up. I'm not getting burned. I'm more fortunate than him. But that foolish wet cow dung doesn't realize that he's going to dry out soon. And he'll be put in the fire and he'll be burning. So there's no happiness in this material world. Krishna certifies this. Anityam asukam lokam. This material world is a place of distress and it's temporary. Even if you say, well, it may be distressful, but at least I'll stay here. No, it's distressful and you'll also not be able to stay. You'll be kicked out also. This is the nature. Why are we trying to make all these arrangements to have a permanent settlement here? We cannot stay. Even if we're willing to suffer, all right, I'll suffer, but at least I'll stay here. I'll have a nice house, and I'll suffer. No. This is our insanity. Actually, this world is an insane asylum. That's why if we participate in anything to do with this material world, then we also become insane. Because what are we participating in? It's like if the members of an insane asylum come to your door and they say, we're going to hold a drama and we'd like you to be in it. And you agree. What does that mean? That means you're going to be in an insane play. Because all the organizers, the writers, the actors, they're all insane. And you're going to join them. So how can there be anything intelligent or enlightened coming out of an insane society? The social body is compared to the physical body. And with our physical body, if there's no head, then, or if the head is not working properly, then the whole body's in trouble. So similarly, the head of society, the brahmanas, are not working properly. The intelligent spiritual class are not leading properly. They're supposed to give direction. Matevidu svartagatin mi Vishnu. But they don't know that the goal of life is to reach Vishnu. What do they think the goal of life is? They think the goal of life is to die with $3 million in the bank, having sex life. That's the perfection of life for them. It's insane. Doesn't make any sense. They have no idea who they are, what the purpose of life is, where they're going after death, how to get real happiness. Yet, these are the leaders. The blind are leading the blind, and everyone's falling into the ditch. So, we should do something about this. This Krishna consciousness movement is supposed to do something. It's to change. The Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to change the... It is to create a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. So, we'll read the purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Suniti pointed out herewith that the benediction received from the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that received from the demigods are not on an equal level. Foolish persons say that no matter whom one worships, one will get the same result. But actually, that is not a fact. In Bhagavad Gita, it is also said that benedictions received from the demigods are all temporary and are meant for the less intelligent. In other words, because the demigods are all materialistically conditioned souls, although they are situated in very exalted positions, their benedictions cannot be permanent. Just like Brahma gave Hiranyakashipu benedictions. What did he give him? What were the benedictions? Well, some of them. Give one or two. Okay, so he gave him the benediction that he wouldn't be killed in the daytime or the nighttime. So does that mean that he was free from death? That he didn't have to fear death? No. He was still hunted by death. He was still doomed. In other words, no matter what benediction the demigods give you, you will still be subject to death. Mrityu sarvaharascha. You'll still be doomed. It's like the doctors are demigods. We go to them for benedictions. Please, give me some more life. All right, I'll give you a benediction. It's like now AIDS. So many people have AIDS. So the doctors are giving the benediction. Now we've figured out a way to extend your life a little bit longer. Instead of dying in 6 months, we've made it now 7 1/3 months. Great benediction. But still you're going to die. Whether it's 6 months, 7 1/3 months, or a little more. So simply the demigods cannot solve our real problems. That's why Suniti says, only Krishna can solve your problem. And what is your problem? Death, old age, disease, birth. This is the real problem. What is it Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita? Janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha dosha darshana. One should see the real problems of life, these four things. Continuing in the purport. Permanent benediction is spiritual benediction, since a spirit soul is eternal. You see the point? If you go to the demigods, you'll get some benediction for your body, to patch up your body a little bit. But if you go to Krishna, then you'll get the spiritual benediction of eternal position in the spiritual world. You'll get out of this place, out of the suffering, forever. That's why it's called real benediction. Continuing. It is also said in Bhagavad Gita that only persons who have lost their intelligence go to worship the demigods. Therefore, Suniti told her son, that he should not seek the mercy of the demigods, but should directly approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead to mitigate his misery. So here in the West, we don't so much worship demigods, right? We don't know so much about demigods. None of us have ever heard of demigods. But we do worship Bill Gates, Michael Jackson, Madonna. These are our demigods and demigoddesses, Princess Diana. We worship these people because we want to get benedictions to be like them. When they write a book, when one of these people writes a book, How I Became So Wealthy, we want to know. We worship them so that we can become like them. We want to enjoy on their level. But this is even more foolish than worshiping the demigods. If Krishna says worshiping the demigods is foolish, to worship the demigods, they're really exalted personality. We're worshiping these paltry, low-class, lower-than-shudra malechas. How much more less intelligent are we? Why do we read their books? Why do we watch on TV? Why do we get their videos and cassettes? Why do we want to associate with them? Because we're very less intelligent. Because we want to go down into the lower species. We want to become lower and lower, more and more degraded, more in ignorance. And the ultimate goal of those in the mode of ignorance is simply to annihilate themselves completely. Suicide. Freedom. That's what they want. Suicide. No existence. No more suffering. That is the mode of ignorance. So therefore, people in the mode of ignorance, they take more intoxication. Some people, they stay intoxicated all the time. You know, the drinkers? Sometimes they're so expert, they just drink and drink until they go into a stupor. They pass out, then they wake up again, they start drinking immediately. So they can always remain dull, dark. So this is our materialistic life. Either we go down in ignorance to the darkness, or in passion, we're like the moth flying into the fire, boldly, enthusiastically, with great ideas. And then the fire burns them up. So either we're passionately flying into the fire or ignorantly committing suicide. Or another way is the mode of goodness, where one just complacently goes on existing here. He thinks he's doing great. I'm okay, you're okay, everything's okay. That's also foolishness. Because he doesn't know that even if he can remain in this world, in the mode of goodness, still, when Mahavishnu inhales again, then he will be inhaled back into the body of Mahavishnu. And then he won't have a body. He won't have any consciousness for a long time. That's sleep. That's really mystic sleep. Not so mystical, it's material, but he'll be asleep for 311 trillion years. If someone said to you, I have this sleeping pill. Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night yet? Okay, here, take this pill. Only one thing. What's that? Well, if you take this pill, you'll be asleep for 311 trillion years. Say, no, I don't want it. It's too long. I only want to sleep for 8 hours. No, 311 trillion years. No, I don't want it. It's too long. I don't want to waste so much time. I want to wake up and do something. I don't want to sleep that long. Continuing in the purport. Material opulences are controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead through his different potencies, and specifically the Goddess of Fortune. Therefore, Suniti told her son, that he should not seek the mercy of the demigods, but should directly approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead to mitigate his misery. Those who are after material opulences seek the pleasure or mercy of the goddess of fortune. Even the highly placed demigods worship the goddess of fortune. But the goddess of fortune, Mahalakshmi herself, is always seeking the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, anyone who takes to the worship of the Supreme Lord automatically receives the blessings of the goddess of fortune. Sometimes we forget this. We think I have to go out and work very hard to win the attraction of the goddess of fortune. But here, the point is, Lakshmi, she is the wife of who? Who's her husband? Narayan, Krishna. So if we please Krishna, then we automatically get Lakshmi's benediction. We don't have to separately try to please her. If you get Krishna, you automatically get Narayan. You get Lakshmi. Look at Prabhupada. Perfect example. When he came to America, he didn't have any money. Couldn't take any money. But he took Krishna. He brought Krishna in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. And he engaged in Krishna's service through bhakti yoga. And therefore, he got all kinds of Lakshmi. Lakshmi came running. So if we want Lakshmi, don't try to take Lakshmi away from Krishna. Ravana tried that. What happened to him? What happened to Ravana? He lost his heads. Not only him, but his whole family. His son was killed, his brother was killed, Kumbhakarna. The whole dynasty, the city was set on fire, everything was annihilated. So if we try to take Lakshmi without Krishna, then we will be annihilated like Ravana. And if we go for Krishna, then automatically we get Lakshmi. And how to go for Krishna? Well, that's what we're learning here. We're learning from Dhruva Maharaj how to get Krishna. Continuing in the purport. At this stage of his life, Dhruva Maharaj was seeking material opulences, and his mother advised rightly that even for material opulences, it is better to worship not the demigods, but the Supreme Lord. So that means, let's say you have some material desire. Let's say you want a nice wife. All right? So what should you do? Worship Lord Shiva? Or Uma? It says in the Bhagavatam, those who want a nice wife worship Lord Uma, worship Goddess Uma. That's Lord Shiva's wife. Katyayani. They worship the Goddess Katyayani to get a nice husband. No, that's not recommended. You should worship Krishna. You should say, my dear Lord Krishna, please give me a very nice wife. Or please give me a very nice husband. Or please let me become free from my attachments to this material. Whatever you want. Sarva kamo va. Akama sarva kamo va. Moksha kama udaradi. Tivrena bhakti yogena. Ejeta purushamparam. The best method is to engage in tivrena bhakti yogena. It means very forceful devotional service. Forceful, strong devotional service, not weak devotional service. Weak devotional service is also better than no devotional service. That means it's mixed with karma or jnana. But why not pure? Anya bilashita shunyam. We should aspire for that. We should desire and aspire for pure devotional service. That's what Srila Prabhupada came to teach us, not just some watered down, half-baked. That you can get in any church. You can get a little bit of bhakti, a little bit of watered down devotion. Isn't it? You worship God. God, give us our daily bread. Give us money. Give us this. Give me that. This. Give me. That's some kind of devotion. But that's not really the highest type. This movement is a branch of Lord Chaitanya's tree, and that means we are supposed to strive for the goal that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had, Prema Pumartha Mahan, pure love of God, without any material desires. Even if at present we are afflicted with the disease of material desires, we should aspire and pray for the day when we'll be free from all these material desires. We should pray to Krishna like that. Continuing in the purport. Although a pure devotee does not seek benedictions from the Supreme Lord for material advancement, it is stated in Bhagavad Gita that pious persons go to the Lord even for material benedictions. A person who goes to the Supreme Personality of Godhead for material gain is gradually purified in association with the Supreme Lord. Thus he becomes free from all material desires and is elevated to the platform of spiritual life. Unless one is raised to the spiritual platform, it is not possible for him to completely transcend all material contamination. Suniti, the mother of Dhruva, was a far-seeing woman, and therefore she advised her son to worship the Supreme Lord and no one else. The Lord is described herein as lotus-eyed, Padma Palasha Lochana. When a person is fatigued, if he sees a lotus flower, all his fatigue can be immediately reduced to nil. Similarly, when an aggrieved person sees the lotus face of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, immediately all his grief is reduced. A lotus flower is also an insignia in the hand of Lord Vishnu, as well as in the hand of the Goddess of Fortune. The worshippers of the Goddess of Fortune and Lord Vishnu together are certainly very opulent in all respects, even in material life. Now, it says that wherever the husband and wife live together without quarreling, then the Goddess of Fortune, she will permanently be present there. In other words, that family will be opulent. Where there's fighting between husband and wife, there won't be Goddess of Fortune. She doesn't stay there. The Lord is sometimes described as Shiva Varinchi Nutam, which means that Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma also offer their respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. Are there any questions or comments? She's participating in it was in the ISKCON or Hare Krishna world that she participated in the centennial ceremonies celebration, Madonna. She's already involved. Devotees are already cultivating her. We emphasize tolerance, yes, but there has to be knowledge. What good is it to be tolerant if you have no knowledge? One time some ladies, older ladies, came to see Prabhupada, and they said, Prabhupada, or Swamiji, we've been meditating for 21 years. Prabhupada said, what have you gotten by your meditation? They said, we've learned to be silent. In other words, tolerance. They've learned to be quiet, silent. Prabhupada said, stones are also silent for millions of years. That is not a great accomplishment. So we don't just want to be tolerant for the sake of tolerance. We want to be tolerant to please Krishna. So we don't tolerate ignorance and falsity and nonsense. If we're tolerant of those things, then we become implicated in the mode of ignorance ourselves. Prabhupada could have been very tolerant of everything going on in the material world. He could have stayed in Vrindavan and gone back to Godhead. But he didn't. He came over to the West and he busted it up. He went right into New York. He said, "This is all nonsense. You're all rascals and you're all fools and hogs and dogs and camels and asses." He called us every name in the book. He wasn't tolerant. He wasn't tolerant of our suffering. He was tolerant of the miseries that were inflicted upon him by material nature. That he tolerated for a higher purpose. So, if we don't tell people that they're in Maya, who's going to tell them? How are they going to find out? Do you think we should just let them revolve in the cycle of birth and death, samsara, for millions of lifetimes until they happen to understand? No, it's our duty to explain, to enlighten them, to bust open this ignorance. Srila Prabhupada wanted us to expose all the nonsense in all fields. That's what this movement, and he does it. You see in the pages of Prabhupada's purports and in his own personal dealings. That's one thing he wouldn't tolerate is someone who said something wrong and someone who was in ignorance, trying to pose themselves as learned. As soon as they would say something wrong, Prabhupada would say, "No. I was just reading in the conversations the other day." And Srila Prabhupada was meeting with a gentleman who was an ambassador from India, who was living in Sweden. Sweden. So they started off the discussion, and within about just a few lines, Prabhupada already had made a particular point. And he was making a very strong assertion of how things should be done in society and what the government should do. And of course, this gentleman was not a devotee. And so Prabhupada said, "So what do you think?" And the man gave his opinion, and Prabhupada just immediately just cut him to shreds, the whole rest of the discussion. So Prabhupada wasn't interested in just having a nice, friendly discussion. Maybe a picture, a photograph taken of himself standing with the ambassador. That wasn't Prabhupada's desire, just to have some photograph. Prabhupada wanted to defeat ignorance. Prabhupada wanted to give real knowledge. And if somebody was in Maya, then Prabhupada would defeat it. So not that I'm okay, you're okay, and we all, you know, go to hell together. Prabhupada cared about the people. He didn't want them to suffer. Therefore, we have inherited now the mantle of preaching on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. It's not enough that Prabhupada was a strong preacher and defeater of illusion. We also are supposed to do that. Like father, like son. We have that responsibility. Now someone will say, "Well, we're not Prabhupada and we shouldn't try to imitate him." Okay, that's accepted. But still, we're supposed to preach the same thing that Prabhupada preached. And we're supposed to emulate and try to follow his footsteps in our behavior as well. We may fall short, that's expected. But if we try, then Krishna will help us. And actually, by Prabhupada's mercy, by the mercy of Lord Nityananda Prabhu and the disciplic succession, we may be able to perform some some service beyond our expectation. It may be possible. Any other? Krishna consciousness is monistic and dualistic, simultaneously one and different. We see everything is, all living entities are in quality one with the Lord, but at the same time they're different than the Lord. So they're the same and different. Not only the living entities, but even material energy is one and different from the Lord simultaneously. Yeah, it resolves the paradox. Krishna consciousness resolves the paradox. Any ladies have a question? No? Okay. Thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.